Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. The time is 10:05 a.m. Members present at this time, Representative Vance, Representative Story, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. The meeting will be a short one today because we do have a floor session scheduled at 10:30. So a few minutes before that, we will have to wrap up and let people have time to transition to the floor. Want to say thank you to Shannon McCain, our committee secretary, and Marissa Truitt for their support for today's meeting. We do have the recording secretary working remotely to try and identify ourselves as we make comments. We just have one item on today's calendar. This is the second hearing for House Bill 82, Gas Leases Renewable Energy Grant Fund. And the plan for today is to go over the answers to questions that were asked in the first hearing. There still remain unanswered questions and just more information that people would like to know about this proposal. And so we have distributed two documents. One is the answers to questions that came up at the first hearing on April 6th. And we received that, I think, about a week ago. And so I think we've distributed that in the last week. And then more recently on Monday, another email that talks about more recent court decision and some questions that came up. So hopefully members have both of those documents. Please let us know if you don't. And then who we have online is Sean Clifton, Policy and Program Specialist from DNR, and then Jeremy Price, a commissioner from AOGCC. And that's because if you notice in the first document, there are several places where AOGCC is referenced in terms of, their authorities and decision making. So, Mr. Clifton, if I could just start with you, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and putting yourself on the record, and then if you could start to just walk through this first document, that would be great.
Yes, for the record, this is Sean Clifton, Policy and Program Specialist with the Division of Oil and Gas, and I also have Deputy Director Haley Payne with me, and she actually was planning to lead off on this, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you have, though.
Great. Welcome, Deputy Director, if you would like to put yourself on the record.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairwoman Tarr. We appreciate the time for the committee again, and we want to make sure and maximize it and use it as effectively as possible. So first off, I would like to start off with the first document that was received by the committee just over a week ago that was response to some of the questions that came up and allowed us to further elaborate on some of the points that were made within there. So if it works best for you, I'm happy to go over this point by point and summarize them. And then as questions come up, we can dive deeper into those.
That sounds great.
Wonderful. And so the very first point that was discussed in the previous committee was surface impacts and will this bill increase the potential for leaks? Of course, we have AOGCC on the line here as well, but what we wanted to address is that because this bill does not grant any surface use access, that there would not be any pipelines, drill rigs, platforms, or any wells at the surface there or at the seabed floor of Ketchumack Bay. And so in this way, we do not see this bill increasing any of the potential impacts for leaks specifically to the section of Ketchumack Bay itself.
Thank you. And let me just see, do members have any questions or want to hear from Jeremy Price, who's commissioner with AOGCC, and we now have Dave Roby, senior reservoir engineer, AOGCC as well. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Jeremy Price could just go over what AOGCC does as far as, you know, providing oversight to the oil wells that are in that area and how this bill would change any of that.
Sure. Mr. Price, did you hear that question?
I did. For the record, this is Jeremy Price with Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The AOGCC does regulate the permitting and drilling of oil and gas wells, and this legislation does not change what we do. So in this instance, we require that through our regulations, the well casing and cementing programs that are in place by the operator contain fluids within the well bore, that there's no migration of fluids from one stratum to another, that any well pressures encountered are controlled both by primary means, with drilling fluids, or secondary means by blowout prevention equipment. And then we ensure that that hydrocarbon zones are also protected so that those hydrocarbons don't migrate outside of their respective strata. So in a practical sense, when wells are drilled, surface casing is set in place below any aquifers or drinking water sources, and then those that surface casing is cemented from the shoe to the surface, so you have at least two barriers protecting those drinking water sources. I can go on further, or we can get more technical as well with Mr. Roby, who's also on the line.
Any follow-up? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair. One of the areas of concern around specifically this township is the Anchor River, and that some of these oil wells are about a mile from the river and obviously the underlying aquifer. Can you speak to the protections, the oversight that you provide to prevent any interference with the safety of the water supply?
Dave, you want to jump in on this one?
This is Dave Roby with the AOGCC. The AOGCC regulates well for the entire life, from drilling through operations to modifications to the well, and all the way up until final plug-in and abandonment and site clearance of the location. So these wells will be monitored by the AOGCC and our inspectors throughout the entire life of the project, and we require on any well that's capable of unassisted flow to the surface that they have a subsurface safety valve installed if they're within an eighth of a mile of any navigable waters, roadways, houses, anything like that. So in this location, there's plenty of houses around, so if the wells are capable of unassisted flow, they will be required to have a subsurface safety valve in place that is tested at least twice a year, and those tests are witnessed by the AOGC inspectors. So there's lots of provisions in place to ensure that that the wells are sound and that they won't leak in the unlikely event that something does happen.
Follow up. Can you describe, you know, what's being proposed here is the subsurface drilling. How do you monitor that when for any potential interference?
Interference with
the water.
Oh, the AOGCC would review the proposed well trajectory and ensure that the well is properly constructed for any geological condition that it may encounter along the drilling path, and that so that the well is properly constructed to ensure that it's secure and will contain fluids to where they're supposed to be and not allow them to go where they're not supposed to be.
Follow-up? Mm-hmm. One of the concerns that my constituents have mentioned is the seismic activity in that area. You know, readout across the inlet, you know, does its rumblings, and we have regular tremors there in the inlet, and their concern is that something like that could cause a disruption with a subsurface drilling that we wouldn't be able to readily see. Is there seismic monitoring that would alert for any potential danger?
This is Dave Roby again. Not seeing really that I'm aware of, but by monitoring the well and the annulus on the well, you could tell if something has happened down downhole.
And this would be a follow-up for DNR. Do you know of any seismic activity disrupting any of the wells in the Cook Inlet or any of the subsurface drilling?
This is Sean Clifton for the record, and through the chair, no, I've never heard about that. Again, you know, if earthquakes were affecting well integrity, that's something that AOGCC would definitely know about. If the question is more about the impacts of development drilling and other associated activities on causing seismic activity, there's only one place in the world that I know of where that's even suspected, and that's in Oklahoma. Then that's fairly unique in terms of geology. And, you know, we're talking about here in the Kenai Peninsula or the volcano across the inlet. I mean, that's a volcanic issue that, you know, there's no way that drilling is impacting that.
Madam Chair, this is Jeremy Price. Can I respond?
Sure.
For the record, this is Jeremy Price with AOGCC. Something to keep in mind is that drilling has been occurring in Cook Inlet since the 1960s, and the regulations that AOGCC has in place with today's standards and modern technology, API standards, they're quite robust, especially compared to 60 years ago. We're not aware of any problems that have occurred as a result of seismic activity with those wells. So we don't see an immediate concern or threat regarding any seismic activity to drilling operations.
Thank you for answering that question. And Madam Chair, just I've been asking asking the questions that my constituents are asking of me to provide clarification and any history of things going on in the Cook Inlet. You know, they're obviously concerned about the water. You know, in Anchor Point, the Anchor River is life. And, you know, when it comes to Kachemak Bay, they clearly do not want any activity there because of the history, because it is untouched. And so I want to make sure that I ask the questions that my constituents are asking me at this time. So thank you for that.
Of course, yeah. And I share those. I really want to understand this as well. Okay, it looks like we have about 10 more minutes. In terms of today's topic, I just wonder if we can, you know, I know thinking a little bit about the directional drilling and some of these mitigation measures, maybe that would be what we could try to cover in the next 10 minutes, because that's a question that's come up today. And so sticking on that theme, if you wouldn't mind talking about the mitigation measures a little bit and then on the directional drilling, and then hopefully we'll be able to take a couple questions.
Absolutely. So thank you again. This is Haley Payne, Deputy Director, Division of Oil and Gas, for the record. So yes, under the section marked mitigation measures on the sheet that was shared with the committee, we have a reference to the 2018 Cook Inlet Best Interest Finding. This is the public process document under which we are enabled to dispose of the Cook Inlet area-wide, which includes the nearby onshore lands there and areas proximal to the Anchor River currently. And so as directed in the document itself, Chapter 9 is a complete listing of the different mitigation measures that are in place in terms of protecting the natural environment there. Some of these include restrictions in terms of siting of facilities, in terms of time of year for specific activities, in terms of, you know, how to handle or contain any fluids or muds or other items that may be on the scene as a result of exploration activities. And so this document here had other sections that provided information about spill prevention, detection, and response, which I believe AOGCC just helped provide some more clarity on. We also have sections on the fish and wildlife uses and values and any reasonably foreseeable effects of leasing and subsequent activity there. I believe Representative Vance had other questions before regarding legislative designated areas and critical habitats, and so we did mark the specific pages in the map to include that sort of information. In terms of directional drilling, I believe the question was, does Section 1 of the bill contemplate directional drilling? And in response to this, for this particular location, the drilling that was envisioned was more vertical and not directional. However, the general provision of it and the nature of the way it's written, it would allow directional drilling from an onshore location without any surface restrictions to somewhere that had the surface restrictions in place. So while that is not the specific direction that this bill contemplates, it is permissible under this drill, under this bill. And if the representatives from AOGCC had any other comments in terms of directional drilling, I'd be happy to yield the floor to them.
Does anyone from AOGCC want to add on that?
This is Jeremy Price at AOGCC for the record. Only to say that directional drilling is quite common and widely applied in the state of Alaska. I don't have the document that was referenced, so I can't speak to it specifically. Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
This is Dave Roby again for the record. Virtually the vast majority, probably 95%+ of the wells drilled in Alaska are directionally drilled, including on the slope and in the Cook Inlet region. So we're well aware of how to regulate those and ensure that they're drilled safely and operated properly.
Well, and I guess I want to just bring up a question that's been asked of me. So I think the concern here is sort of, you know, if I'm drawing a map in my head, you know, I have the ocean floor, right, is, you know, the sort of the topography of this uneven sort of topography and this vertical well, right? So, you know, you're sort of aware that's being drilled from the onshore already leased component of this. And I think the concern is sort of, you know, how far of a stretch can you go then, you know, through directional drilling so that people can feel fully comfortable with, you know, what the end result would be. And I think the specific question is, you know, so you have a Ketchumek Bay protected area. And so then would you be able to... be onshore, but through directional drilling, be able to drill and be drilling into the protected area of Ketchumek Bay?
For the record, this is Dave Roby. Depends on the rig that's used, but they can do directional drilling that reaches out to about 7 miles from where the wellhead surface location is. So say they're half a mile from the shore, they could theoretically reach 6.5 miles offshore.
And without having the sort of map well enough planted into my head, you know, does that create a circumstance where the onshore development could have directional drilling into the protected area of Ketchumek Bay? Because I think that could be the issue of concern that I feel like I'm hearing.
Through the chair, this is Haley Payne again, deputy director. So I believe that in terms of the accessing the, you know, protected area, the directional drilling itself would take place far below the sea floor. And so in that map that you described, you know, there would be, you know, the well would come down and then here's the sea floor here. And so far beneath where that seafloor location is where potentially the directional aspect of the well would take place. So it's not that there would be some sort of like pipeline or well casing or anything through the waters themselves of Ketchumek Bay. This would all take place deep below the subsurface. Some of the information that we sent you showed that, you know, nearby they were going to 5,500 feet. of true vertical depth. So just to kind of give you an indication of the distance that would be there between the seafloor and where any of this geologic activity would be taking place.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Ortiz has a question.
So just to be clear, as a follow-up on Representative Tarr's question, that directional drilling would be understandably below the water level to a significant level, but it would be in the area of the protected region, the protected waters, correct?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, from my understanding, it's the waters themselves that are the protected, the region, correct? And so in that way, it would be the subsurface itself that's accessed, and so there would be no surface entry or authorization that would allow anything into the surface. So the point of this bill currently as written is that because that particular area there near shore is restricted from all oil and gas leasing, it's not to be accessed. However, there are, potentially hydrocarbon regions, specifically gas, that are located deep below the seabed floor that could be accessed from the nearby unrestricted lands in a way that wouldn't go into or surfacely impact the protections in place for the fisheries and the area in that location. Does that answer your question, Representative Ortiz?
Yes, it does. It answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Christ-Tompkins and then Representative Story, and it's 10:27, and so we'll do these questions, and then we'll have to wrap up and continue this conversation, but appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was about Section 1 of the bill, and I was wondering if DNR, moving away from Anchor River and Cook Inlet and Kachemak Bay, if there are other parts of the state that it would sort of be plausible that would sort of be affected or implicated by passage of Section 1 into law, which is just to say, is there active oil and gas activity adjacent to other legislatively designated areas elsewhere in Alaska where horizontal or directional drilling could occur, that would be able to occur if Section 1 were passed into law?
Representative Price-Tompkins to the chair. At this time, the only legislatively, statutorily closed area for oil and gas leasing is the Kachemak Bay. So other locations where there's different designations in place, that subsurface may not belong to the state. And so that may be federal lands. It could be belonging to a different type of mineral owner. So this is something that's more just kind of forward thinking, that kind of more of a general provision that if there were to be other regions that the legislature would find it necessary to instigate certain protections on and closures for, that basically DNR would just be reserving the ability in the future that if it were to be possible from a nearby unrestricted location to access those minerals, that they would not be closed.
Okay, thank you. So in summary, sorry, if I may, there's a follow-up, Madam Chair. This is more prospective. As you said, if the legislature were to make future designations of different areas, that's really where Section 1 would come into play, and it would sort of preempt any confusion about the ability for directional drilling to occur.
Yes, Representative, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Story, in our last minute.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. Thank you, Chair Tarr. I'm used to saying Chair Christ-Tompkins in this room for state affairs. Anyway, my question would be, in what other areas in Alaska or elsewhere have we done subsurface drilling horizontally underneath protected lands, and have there been any effects that have happened in other places?
Representative Story through the chair. So as you'll note in the Cook Inlet Best Interest Finding document that was sent, on page 4-4, we have a map of all of the current critical habitat areas and other sort of legislative designated areas that We are currently compatible in terms of our oil and gas activities and include any surface restrictions in the mitigation measures section of Chapter 9. But as was explained to Representative Price Tompkins, there are no other statutorily closed state areas, state mineral areas, that we have an example to point to at this time.
Just follow up. Yes, I was just wondering, not here, but if there is anything else that we're aware of in other parts of the world where there have been incidences where they have done horizontal drilling and there's been some sort of effect from that on the environment. That was just my question.
Absolutely. And Representative Story, perhaps to point towards one of the answers that was provided earlier by the AOGCC, roughly 95% of the wells that are currently drilled in the state, including the North Slope and Cook Inlet, do have a directional component to it. And you will see we have a very successful track record in terms of safety and protecting our environment. We do that down in Cook Inlet, and we've been able to do it on the North Slope, where we have, you know, Arctic waters and other sort of marine mammals that are under protections. And thus far, we've had a very successful, you know, ability to regulate through our robust programs.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you, Mr. Price and Mr. Roby. Appreciate you joining us. Did you have something, Representative Vance?
It can hold.
Okay. We are holding this bill. You know, we had to have the shorter meeting today. We'll be in touch and continue this conversation. So at 10:31, we are adjourned.